Okay, so I'll introduce myself. My name is Heidi Pitts, and I worked on this presentation with Brian Armour from the CDC, and he's not able to be here today. And so the title, you'll notice the title that was on the previous slide and this title are somewhat different. We're going to look at what we're able to do with the data we have is give you an overview of what people are using for DME. So here's sort of a relationship to what we had initially had hoped to do. Our initial hypothesis was that DME coverage is insufficient, that there's going to be DME that people need to have but that is not provided or that they lack due to insurance. We thought there would be a connection between the type of insurance they have and the DME lacks that they have. But the way that we're doing this survey, as was explained in the first one, there's a follow-up survey, and all the questions that relate to the financial aspect are in the second follow-up section of the survey. So while this is a half-year data set for the financial aspects section, it's really more like a quarter-year data set. So we have 162 households who responded to this question. So we really just don't have enough data to answer our initial hypothesis of are people lacking what they need. Plus, when we looked at this, actually about 90% said, no, we have what we need. So we don't know if that is just due to a lack of data. So we just decided to look at DME usage overall. But in the end, we should have about 750 responses to this section of the survey. So again, looking at our outline in terms of the DME usage in the population, we'll look at who's using what they're using. We'll look at a functional limitation, like Heidi described, about severe versus less severe limitations, and then connect that a little bit to the type of DME that they're using. But because we have a smaller sample set with 162, we'll take a quick look at some of the demographics just to sort of describe the part of the sample that we have. So if you look at age and gender, it's pretty evenly split for women if we cut it off at 65, looking at who might have Medicaid or Medicare after age 65. For women, about 50% are above 65, 50% are below. But for men, about 66% are below 65 in the sample that we're looking at. The paralyzing conditions follow the same as the entire half-year data set, with stroke being the most prevalent cause behind paralysis, followed by spinal cord injury and then multiple sclerosis, and then everything else I lumped into others. And what I'm reporting here in the demographics, these are the raw numbers that we're dealing with. So a lot of what we will discuss when we talk about the actual DME usage is going to be with stroke and SCI, just because with 61 and 35, those are our biggest numbers. Okay, and again, a lot of these demographics are where we hope to go when we have the full data set. So looking at issues of insurance, we just sort of took a quick look at the percentages that are living alone versus those in households with two or more people. It's interesting that stroke has, there's a much bigger discrepancy between the percentages for who's living, or the percentage that is living alone and the percentage in households with two or more people. But again, it'll be tied to kind of the age and the health insurance coverage, both of the whole household and then the person with paralysis. If we look at employment by age, again, cutting it at 65, which is a fairly typical retirement age, over the whole sample of 162, only 10% reported working either for themselves or for wages. Of those, 75% of the 16 people who are working were under 65. If you look at the group 64 and younger, 75% of them are either unable to work or not working, and that includes being out of work for a year or more, as well as being a homemaker or a student. So we're going to move into a functional limitations definition of severity. And again, Heidi talked about this briefly, so I'll be brief here as well. These are the four questions from the ACS of their six questions defining disability. You've got ambulatory, self-care, cognitive difficulties, and independent living difficulties. We just lumped them and said a person with paralysis with 3 to 4 limitations is more severely limited than someone who reported limitations in 1 or 2 of these categories. So just looking at how many fall into each category, almost 60% said yes to limitations to 3 or 4 of the questions. About one third said yes to one or two of those questions, and there were 9%, about 14 people who said reported zero limitations for those four. So if we look at functional definition broke down by the paralyzing condition, for ambulatory difficulty, which is the difficulty walking or climbing stairs, it's similar across the entire population with paralysis, and then if you look at it by paralyzing condition with stroke or SCI. So 80 to 85%, around 83% overall report ambulatory difficulty. But then if you break it down by the other three difficulties, there's a much wider range. Stroke overall reports much more limitations and limiting conditions than did the persons living with spinal cord injury. And just the overall population. So, and there's a much broader discrepancy between, say, for cognitive difficulty, there's a 23% gap in terms of more people with stroke reporting cognitive limitations than those with SCI. But again, these are very small numbers. So when we have the remaining 600 responses, could be very different. So this is, we asked about all these categories of DME. There's 26 of them, and then the reason I put initial in parentheses is this is how I broke them down just to make sense, to be able to do an easier analysis. So this is not necessarily the final way it has to be categorized, and if people have better suggestions, I'd love to hear them. But we looked at, we grouped them as wheelchairs, walking devices, bathroom aids, beds, things to aid with pain, respiratory aids, and then everything else was just grouped as others. Okay, so if we initially look at the percent of individuals using at least one piece of DME, because a lot of people are using more than one piece, the largest percentage, ambulatory difficulty, almost 90% report using at least one piece of DME, down to a low of with cognitive difficulty, only 50% who said yes to the cognitive difficulty question report using at least one piece of DME. If we look at exactly what people are using and leave out what the severity or what the difficulty limitations are, overwhelmingly the most used or most needed type of DME are walking devices and wheelchairs. And this, because obviously there's multiple things within each category, somebody could be using two pieces of walking devices, two, a power and a manual wheelchair, something like that. So this is just, they reported at least one thing in each category. And again, because the ambulatory difficulty was the most reported difficulty for persons living with paralysis, it's not surprising that the most needed and used DME are walking devices and wheelchairs. So now if we break it down, again, we're looking at stroke and SCI here primarily because right now with our numbers, those were the biggest groups. And so, but again, the DME usage across these two types of paralyzing conditions is actually very similar, which is interesting because the functional limitation that they report is not similar after we look at ambulatory difficulty. But again, because both types of paralyzing conditions use 80 to 85% of them are reporting ambulatory difficulty. Again, it would follow that the DME they're using the most are walking devices and wheelchairs. But the percentages here are very similar across both groups for all types of DME. Again, small numbers, so in 6 months we'll be able to say more about this. So this is, again, this ties back to the original hypothesis that we had, that we wanted to connect the type of health insurance coverage people had with what they reported lacking. And here we said preliminary data set, our quarter year data set, indicates 90% say they have what they need, which really surprised us. And so it could be that that's the end of the story. 90% are getting what they need, and there's not that lack of DME that we expected, or we're looking for perhaps a better way to indicate a lack. And that's where we started looking at, oh, the severity by functional limitation, or just looking for other ways to categorize this issue. So again, is there a better way to match that? We'd sort of toss that out to the group, and we'd be interested to hear your ideas. we were considering the relationship between functional limitations and the DME that people need and lack. And then again, ultimately, when we have all the data or all the responses, what's the connection or the relationship between the type of insurance people have and any DME that they lack? So we did this all backwards. We put our presenter disclosure at the very end. We have nothing to disclose. And these do not represent the ideas or policy decisions of the CDC. And then this is our contact information for Brian and I. So thank you very much.
I think we run until noon, is that right? So we have about 40 minutes for discussion and dialogue, and I think I would really invite a discussion around this. It's an interesting, and you're hearing something that's midstream in terms of tackling a somewhat complex issue and trying to get population level data on that. I would ask the, maybe just because of the limited seats, I'd ask if the primary presenters could come up to the table for questions, and then if you need to, you can call on your co-authors to supplement any of the information. So questions or comments? And maybe I would invite Tony Cahill. Do you have any comments that you would like to make, Tony, around this process? No comments. What you had informed me earlier is that there is a publications plan. A lot of the analyses have been tentatively planned out, and a publications plan has been put together that will include some policy briefs to really start to translate this out for policy implications, and that the papers that you heard today reflect some of the earliest publications that are expected to come out of this study. Yes.
I was just curious as to how you plan to address the whole issue of BMI going forward. I know it's very complicated when you're talking about those people and really about that a couple of years ago.
Right. So the question is, how do you plan to interpret or discuss BMI, and is that a measurement issue?
Yes.
What's the, yeah, given some of the questions and concerns around measurement of obesity within a paralysis sample?
I think that's a great question. We struggled with that with the survey. We talked at one point about doing waist circumference and doing self-reported weight circumference, but we worried that we wouldn't get an accurate measure that way. People are used to seeing height and weight questions on surveys, or used to hearing them in a telephone survey. So that's what we ultimately ended up doing, even though we know that there are some concerns about people being in wheelchairs not being weighed often enough, or may not have an accurate account of what their current weight is. And I welcome other feedback in that area, but it was very difficult to come up with a way to, collect the data on BMI, and we just decided to go with the status quo and stick with self-reported height and weight, yeah.
Do you mind coming to the mic, actually repeating the question and coming to the mic?
This is a workout for you.
It gives me time to think, right?
It does.
Okay, so I'll repeat the question partially to make sure that I got all the pieces and so that everybody can hear it as well, but the comment and question being that if you need a wheelchair, you're going to get it, and so maybe the question or the research issue isn't are you lacking DME, but how much out-of-pocket expenses are you incurring to get the DME you need or to get the appropriate, the hassle factor too. And that's a great question. We did not ask out-of-pocket expenses for DME. So I'll have to think if there's a way around that or if one of the surveys, well, we didn't ask that. And I'm not sure how to measure the hassle factor, but...
You always want more data.
Yes. I'm an economist, and we always want more data. But I'm making a note of that. Maybe there's a way to sort of backdoor estimate that. Next question.
So the comment is why we're not more environmental factors reported out, because it's often the environment that can be accommodating or disabling rather than the condition itself. Are there questions that relate to environment or accessibility that are included in the survey?
I know they weren't reported on today.
There aren't any environmental questions on this survey. We were looking, because we wanted to replicate what was done 4 or 5 years ago, we asked the same conditions and causes that were asked, and we didn't do environmental questions then either. I don't know.
Yeah. It's a very good point.
Yeah.
I know that it's clear that the next area for real measurement refinement is going to be around environmental and participation issues. I know that there are the sort of set questions. I know that you were relying more on some of the standard questions that are already out so that you can compare, and those environmental questions are probably not located clearly in any of the existing questionnaires, but I think that that's clearly an issue, and it's a hard one, having worked in another area where we were trying to figure out measures of environment, recognizing their contribution to the experience of disability, that it is the new, it will be the new era, I think. Other recommendations for thoughts about how best to approach environment, or maybe that's a topic for later on, but I think you've really hit on something, and that is core. Move to the next question, and then if other people have comments about environment, we'd welcome that. Boy, between laryngitis, no mic, or one mic, this is going to be... Allison, would you like to come up to the mic, or... All right, we can manage that. You mentioned tobacco already. Did you assess for any other drug use? Is that the question? Good. This is like the old post office game, isn't it?
No. It won't go any further. Yeah.
Oh.
I'll trade with you.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So we did not assess for other drug use. Tobacco was the only one, and I think that's because of kind of a combination of, well...
Time limitations. I think at one point we had alcohol on there, but, you know, it's always a give and take. You have to weigh what's most important and decide, you know, how much time is allotted and also money. stint, you know, for the survey. So they were not included. Is there a particular, you know, drug use that you're interested in, or were you more interested in alcohol, or? Oh, sorry.
So the question is, did we separate out the ability to do transfers in terms of the DME that they were using, or?
It could be the DME that they're using, or it could be just their independence and being able to move from you know, a wheelchair to a regular chair, or being able to get up out of a chair into a walker, that sort of thing.
No, we didn't use those. We wanted to use the four ACS questions just to then be able to compare against the general population with a disability. So we didn't dig any deeper in terms of the ability to do transfers or things like that. No, again, due to time limitations. When we first started planning the survey, it was like 55 minutes long, and so we just had to cut some things, so no.
Are you saying that people don't want to be on the phone for 55 minutes?
We'd have a sample size of 5. Yes?
For the two Heidis, I was thinking about the severity. I wonder whether you'd get more of a distinction between severe and non-severe if you didn't treat the four items of the scale, but instead used. Well, one of those items, I typically use it as an indicator if I felt a more severe disability, and that is the ADL question, the ADL-like question, which is you guys have a phone address for me. And they're not kind of parallel measures, so I would try at least just using that. If they say yes to that, if that's severe, and if they don't say yes to that, it's not severe, and then see whether you get more of a distinction between the severe and the non-severe. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's a great idea. So I'll rephrase it for everyone so they can hear. What he's saying is that instead of just classifying severe or less severe by the number of limitations one said yes to use the independent living difficulty question, which is, do you have difficulty dressing or bathing by itself? Is that correct? And if they said yes or no, kind of a binary thing to that one question, yes would be severe, no would be not.
That's correct.
Less severe.
It's a self-care question.
The self-care, okay. That's a great idea.
I think what we're talking about is some of the limitations inherent in the ACS questions themselves, because the ACS questions for hearing, vision, ambulation, and cognition, they're already asking if you have a serious difficulty at least. And so it's really tough with the ACS. I think if you're looking at serious ambulation difficulties, if you ask an ambulation question and say, do you have serious difficulty going up and down stairs or walking or whatever, you're already cutting out people who don't have a serious problem but have a problem. Mm-hmm. And then to compound that with another question, I think you don't know who you're talking about pretty quickly. And I think that is, I think it would be much better if we had a scaled response set to the ACS questions. Do you have any difficulty walking? If yes, how serious? And so then you can get to those fine gradations within that rather than yes, no, serious.
Got it.
I really appreciate this dialogue because I think we're talking about how to take on it a population level survey, which always needs to have broader categories and sort of a thinner approach relative to, in some ways, clinical assessment. And then I think what Vince is proposing is something that would be a little bit deeper than a straight population or you know, depends on how you cut the questions. If Barbara Altman were here, which she is not, she would argue that the reliability on anything other than a dichotomous response was not high enough in order to allow for that kind of a graded response to happen. But Vince, do you have any other thoughts about that? Don't you love it when CDC gets to debate its own issues?
So, yeah, I understand the reliability issue. The problem for me is that we've got a group of people with disabilities that have lesser disabilities and more severe disabilities, and the public health opportunities, I think, exist more in the people with the lesser disabilities because they have not yet accrued all the secondary conditions and all the comorbidities and all the other things that public health is probably set to prevent because the serious people are already seriously involved. I think we're missing a tremendous prevention opportunity by not hitting that group.
Are there other questions?
Again, go for it.
Yeah, the other problem with dichotomous information is that it can take you down the wrong path. You know, and so I really have a difficult time trying to establish policy on yes and no question.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to hold forth again. So the first survey was intended to look at prevalence of paralysis in the general population. The purpose of the second study is to look at comorbidities and secondary conditions in this. So there are big other areas left to look at. And again, you've got 20 minutes and 60 questions, and to jam every issue into that time period and that number of questions can't be done. So, you know, putting out the hand here to Christopher and Dana Reeve Paralysis Foundation that much more research is needed in this area. It's very rich, and there's a whole lot left to know. But, you know, this is a good start.
I don't think we have to, unless there are other questions. I don't know that we have to prolong. We don't have to fill the room until noon. What I'd like to do is thank all the presenters and all the people who have planned and participated in this process. What you got to hear today was sort of this in the thick of it without having already put on the veneer of hiding the faults and the flaws that might be there and inviting dialogue for starting to understand a difficult issue to assess, but trying to drill deeper into understanding who is this population, what are the core issues that might differentiate them from people with this broad category of disability, and then how do we start to understand what some of the future needs may be. So thanks to, do you have Doug? Do you want,
Foundation caregivers of people living with paralysis. And it's our first conference for caregivers. So it wasn't part of the survey, but I just wanted to let you know.
So just for the recording. For the recording as well, the Reeve Foundation is very mindful about the issues around caregiving and is planning a mindfulness a conference on caregiving. And was is it for November of
November
16th in Philadelphia?
Co-sponsored
with Inglis House in Philadelphia. So the plug, and thank you all for attending.